Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP. So, we are live. We will take your questions this evening. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable speaking on air, you can give your question to Lori and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So tonight, I'm kind of piggybacking off last week where we were talking about, what we were learning from COVID and how we can relearn how we spend and save. So I didn't get to cover everything I wanted to last week, so I thought I will do that tonight. And the topic, therefore, is more cash flow ideas. Last week, we kind of had a quick list, and that quick list was the importance of an emergency reserve. How are we saving? Are we building up retirement funds? Are we paying down debt? Or what are we doing with that extra cash flow that we may have accumulated during this past year in COVID, as we really found that we weren't spending the way, you know, we typically do. And we also learned that maybe we don't need to continue spending at that level or that degree, or being a little bit more focused on what we do spend. And in spending and keeping track of what we spend, one thing I've said for years and years for regular listeners, you know, people who have money usually know how they're spending it. So the folks that I've worked with over the years who have a budget, and some people don't like that word, let's call it a spending plan. If you know how much you're spending, these are typically the people that I see who have really accumulated money. It's just like a diet. When you kind of pay attention to how you're eating, you're going to be in better health, better shape. And the same thing applies to your financial life. The more you're paying attention to it and aware of, you know, what you're taking in and what you're putting out, you're going to be in a better financial health as well. And one of the ways you can do that is by having a spending plan. In past shows, I've talked about a way to budget that's not really budgeting for those people who are challenged in that realm, is to do something we call the funnel method, where each pay period, or whether you're maybe you're retired, you have your money all going into, let's call it the savings account. All of your either paychecks or your IRA distributions or your Social Security all goes into a savings account. And once a month, you transfer what you think your budget is or how much you think you're spending each month. You transfer that amount once a month to your checking account and you pay your bills. If you're short all the time, it means you're spending more than you realize, spending more than you're thinking, and you're constantly having to pull from that savings account, then you maybe need to reevaluate. Occasionally, the money will accumulate a little bit, and that could be that you're not spending as much as you thought. That's a great, great, you know, sign. Or it could be that that monthly budget amount includes some expenses that you might have quarterly or semi-annually, such as car insurance or homeowners insurance or real estate taxes, that type of thing. So you want to let that kind of flow through for a few months. So we call that the funnel method, where you transfer once a month what you think you're spending. And then your checking account, for the most part, would be kind of in and out, in and out, in and out. And that works for a lot of people. And then your savings hopefully would accumulate. And it's that savings that we want to make sure that you have that emergency reserve. We talked about how that has changed over the years. When I first started in this business, people used to say have a 3-month reserve. Then we started talking about a 6-month reserve. And frankly, we've been through so many different kind of events over the past 21 years that I've been at Valley National in particular, that we tend to talk to our clients more about even a year reserve, and also even watching out for big expenditures such as cars, weddings, you know, the roof repair, buying a new home, and kind of keeping some money more conservatively even for that. But bottom line, tonight, kind of talking about cash flow ideas, piggybacking off last week, of course. So that's kind of the synopsis of where we were last week. I mentioned the funnel method. That's for people who don't really want a budget or don't want to use a budget app or who are just challenged or don't like that word, budget. But there are a lot of people who actually do like budgets and like keeping track of their money. Another option other than the funnel method could even be an Excel spreadsheet. Now, a lot of people might not like Excel, but there are a lot of people who like Excel. Personally, I love Excel, that it adds up things for me. That's really nice. And in fact, years ago, I set up what I called, life planning budget or something, where I set up a balance sheet and cash flow worksheet in Excel for people. And I used to kind of give that to them, and they could track their assets, their liabilities, and their cash flow in that. You can certainly do something like that in Excel, set up categories, do whatever works for you, basically. I've been told by people over the years that they like the envelope method, that you can set up envelopes and say, here's my envelope for utilities, groceries, you know, that type of thing. You know, I don't know if I'd be a little bit too tempted sitting there with an envelope full of cash or something like that. That's for people who like to pay cash, I suppose. But the bottom line is, if you find something that works for you and it works, that is the method you want to use. So if something is not working for you, just switch and try something else. So in doing that, I have been told by a number of clients that they really like these budget apps, you know, applications you can download on your phone, and they have really liked them and they have worked for them. And so I thought tonight I would spend a little bit of time talking about some of the budget apps and the differences in them. And this was really available to anybody. From Investopedia. Investopedia put this together. Kate Doerr wrote it. It's called Best Budgeting Apps, and it was reviewed by Marissa Figgett. And it really is a great synopsis, and I can't do any better than that, in particular because I've not used these apps. So we have to kind of go to a resource that has given a good review and have done their homework on those. So when we come back from this first break, I'm going to give it a little bit of an overview of those apps. And then as I move on from that, I want to talk about some ideas for cash flow savings that or cash flow uses that I have come across doing tax returns, ideas that really flow out of that I see people not doing, that I thought it could be an awareness issue. So that's what I hope to cover when we come back from our next break after I finish talking about budget apps. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1 and WDIY.org. Programs of prior shows are also available there under Public Affairs. Just scroll down for Your Financial Choices and choose whatever show is of interest to you. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in to me. And since we're talking about budget apps tonight, James just had wondered, maybe there are people out there listening who are currently using a budget app, and if you would like to call and share your story, that would be great. And you can do that again by calling 610-758-8810. Let me go over some of those again from the article from Investopedia, Best Budgeting Apps by Kate Doran, reviewed by Marissa Figgett. Here's one that I definitely had a client tell me that she was using and really loved it. I mean, and very committed to it for a very long time. And what a difference it has made for her. And that is called You Need a Budget, YNAB, You Need a Budget. And according to Kate Doerr, it earns the top spot because of the company's renowned budgeting philosophy and reputation. WNAB says new budgeters typically save $600 in their first 2 months and more than $6,000 in their first year. And although it is the most costly option on their list, the company offers a free trial and 100% no-risk money-back guaranteed. And then they go over the pros and cons of each of these apps, and they talk about the pros of the You Need a Budget, that it's a complete budget makeover, that free trial, the money-back guarantee, and that there's strong customer service and comprehensive education. The cons, of course, was you pay for it, but that really, for some people, makes you more committed to it. If you are one of those kinds of people to feel like you want to make sure you're getting your money's worth on something, this does have a fee, but then maybe that makes you more committed to using it. Again, it's whatever discipline it's going to take to get you to do something. It is more intensive to learn, and recently they said in this article that there were some sync issues. But it does rise to the top of their list because of the budgeting philosophy, and it lets you sync your bank accounts, import data from files manually, or you can manually enter each transaction. To begin, the company suggests learning the basics about the app through video courses, a live workshop, a reading guide. They offer a proactive budgeting approach, and rather than tracking what you have already spent, like some competitors, and you create your first budget after first signing up, and you assign every dollar a purpose, like your rent or car payment, for example. And the goal is to eventually get at least 1 month ahead, so you're spending money you earned from 30 days ago. That's very interesting. The company offers extensive educational resources and customer support to help keep you on track. And they have, you know, security and privacy as a top priority as well. Now, another app that they reviewed, and they call this the best free budgeting app. So the You Need a Budget, the YNAB, had a cost to it. And you might want to see what the current cost is, by the way, because this article, I think, was very recent, but the cost per year could be, you know, need to be updated, so don't hold me to that. But the free budgeting app that they reviewed was Mint, M-I-N-T, and I'd have to go back. I had actually someone from Mint as a guest on the show when that app first came out, so they were not such a big company back then. And willing to come on, you know, our little radio show here. And I thought that was fascinating at the time. Well, they're very, very big now. It is one of the most popular budgeting apps available with over 25 million users. I would love to go back and see how many users they were on when they were first on our show. The app is free, easy to use for budgeters of all levels. You can also set up bill payment reminders, track investments, and access your TransUnion credit score, all of which makes Mint our choice for best free budgeting app. Again, this is from Investopedia's article, Best Budgeting Apps by Kate Doerr, and reviewed by Marissa Figa. And they talk about the pros being, of course, free and the credit scores and the investment tracking. And the cons were in-app product advertisements. Well, that's probably what helps make it free, folks. It's just like a magazine. You have to flip through 30 pages of advertisements to read your favorite articles, but that's what keeps the cost down. And I imagine that is the same logic here. Some people have complained about technical issues. Technical issues, I would say, sometimes, you know, could be the, you know, the person using it. It isn't always the app itself. It could be the person or the source that you're, you know, have downloaded the app on. And they do say that the spending categorization could be better. It does offer the best-known free budgeting app on the market. It's a great option for anyone looking to improve their spending habit. And the app is free, but you may see targeted financial product advertisements. You can sync your financial accounts within the app or manually add transactions. And it allows you to see all your accounts in one place and keep track of your spending on a daily basis. The app automatically organizes your spending so you can see totals by category at a glance. Offers monthly bill tracking, including payment reminders to avoid late fees. It offers the ability to keep track of your investments and check portfolio fees. And it does have some education resources as well, like loan repayment calculators and home affordability calculators. So that all sounds great. And they protect your data through features like security scanning with VeriSign, multi-factor authentication, and Touch ID mobile access. And they store your login information in a separate database with multiple layers of hardware and software encryption. So it all sounds, you know, very interesting. And I'm sure that you can, you know, Google either of these applications and see a demonstration. But none of them would be probably truly, what do I want to say, analyzed until you're actually using them and doing it to see what's going to work for you. And again, the goal is do something that's going to work for you. If you are someone who is on your phone all the time, then an app on your phone might be just fine and work well for you. You just want to make sure that whatever you do, that you're going to continue to do it. Now, as the topic of the show has been cash flow and cash flow ideas, the next app that they had reviewed was something called Simplify. So this app, they're saying, is best for cash flow, and it's Simplify by Quicken. Simplify by Quicken, and James has given it a big thumbs up. He says Mint.
I just wrote that down myself.
Simplify by Quicken, so he's heard of it. So Simplify earns high marks because it's offered a personalized spending with real-time updates of how much you have left to spend throughout the month. And it also syncs with your bank accounts to show you where you stand and your progress on financial goals. And Simplify by Quicken also tracks your monthly bills and subscriptions, including those you don't use. Not sure what that means. Pros: strong cash flow tools, watch list for mindful spending, free 30-day trial. Cons: there's also a fee for this one, $35.99 per year. Again, you have to check that. I don't know how timely this article was, and that there were some complaints about technical issues. Again, it seems like everyone has some little complaints about that, but it could be the users themselves when people talk about some of the complaints. So when we come back from this next break, I'll finish up talking about Simplify. And then there were one or two other ones to kind of go over. And then we will talk about some of the cash flow ideas that I have, you know, picked up on during tax season to help people kind of put their, you know, their money to work in some smart ways. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can ask questions off topic as well, and we can talk live on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Sieber. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. And if you have questions this evening, and they could be tax questions as well, I know it's still tax season for some of us, me, trying to get through tax season. The due date is May 17th. If you have questions, you haven't finished up your return yet, there's something that you've been pondering, you're welcome to give us a call, and you can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it in. Phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can also send questions through email at yourfinancialchoices.com. Talking about apps, James was checking on the App Store what kind of apps were popping up, and the three top ones that had come up as far as downloads, so it doesn't necessarily mean top is, you know, the best one, but the most downloaded: Mint, which of course is the most popular, probably because there isn't a fee, and then one that I don't think I've heard of called Truebill, and I don't see that on their list. And Truebill is just for budgeting and billing. And then, of course, the Simplify came up as well by Quicken. And that ranks best for cash flow because it's effective tracking capabilities. They say it's the best option for staying on top of how much you spend between your paychecks, offers a 30-day free trial, and then you'll pay $3 a month, basically. I'm rounding. It's like $2.99. Or billed annually at $35.99 or $3.99 per month if you choose not to pay up front. So that's interesting, because if you'd start it monthly and you don't want to do it up front, maybe you can get out of it. You know, try it for a few months and see if you're actually doing it. To get started, you have to sync your bank accounts, and then you complete the snapshot of your finances. It automatically categorizes your spending, tracks recurring bills and subscriptions, and stays on top of upcoming expenses. One standout feature is the app's custom watch list, which allow you to limit spending by category or payee. Also, the custom spending plan monitors cash flow to make sure you never spend more than you make. Oh, that could be really good for a lot of people. Simplify by Quicken offers tips while you're using the app, but there's also a blog full of educational content at your fingertips. And they also have that security and privacy are top priorities. And I suppose, too, that is a name that people are familiar with, Quicken. And that might make people feel a little bit better about that. They do have some 256-bit encryption to transmit banking data and keeps the information confidential. One for a budget app for overspenders by Pocket Guard. Pocket Guard made the cut because the app helps curb overspending. The company uses an algorithm to track your income, expenses, and savings goals, and to tell you how much you can spend every day. These spending limits make it easier to quit overspending and take control of your financial goals. The pros: free basic budgeting app, cash flow at a glance, easy to use. Cons: Pocket Guard Plus has a cost, no phone support, and some complaints about technical issues. Pocket Guard earned the top spot as best for overspenders because it features focus on helping users take control of overspending. The app offers a free and a paid Premium version, Pocket Guard Plus, and then you connect your checking, savings, credit cards, and the app can see what you're spending, where to save, and remind you when credit card bills are due. Pocket Guard's In My Pocket feature uses an algorithm to identify how much you can spend based on your income, upcoming bills, goals, recent spending, and budgets. And it offers a smart bill reminder to keep track of due dates and shows you where you may be able to negotiate lower bills. There's also an automated savings feature. And it automatically moves the money to an FDIC-insured bank account on your behalf. You know, some of these things they're talking about in these apps, you know, each company probably has to come up with the buzzwords that are going to act like it's differentiating from another budget app. I'm sure you could do all the very similar things in either of the, you know, other three budget apps I just mentioned, or vice versa. So just keep that in mind. Again, bottom line, what's going to work for you? Do you want to pay for it or do you not want to pay for it? That's a very easy way to kind of start narrowing it down. If you don't want to pay for it, then Mint.com seems to be one way to go, or Excel spreadsheets, as we talked about earlier, or, you know, the envelopes or the funnel method that I mentioned. And in fact, the funnel method might be a very easy way to start without having to think too much about it. All right. Personal capital. Again, I like to give credit for people who have done this. And this was an article written for Investopedia by Kate Doerr and reviewed by Marissa Figgett. And it was called Best Budgeting Apps. So you can look this all up as well. And the one for best for building wealth is called Personal Capital. It has a scores high because the company offers the best free tools for wealth building. You can sync your financial accounts in one place to track your net worth. Again, I mentioned you could do that on an Excel spreadsheet, and then no one has to know about your business. But it helps you plan for the future with the retirement planner and use the fee analyzer to check portfolio fees. That's interesting because I was just talking with another advisor about this. When people are evaluating maybe funds to use when they're investing and they think about the fees, you have to also consider, what are you getting for the fees you're paying? So, you know, we work with clients and there are fees, but there's a lot of other advice that's going on. It's not just the investment. So be careful when we talk about using an app to check portfolio fees, because you have to understand what you're getting for that. Pros of the Personal Capital is free wealth management app, retirement planner tool, education planner tool, net worth tracking, fee analyzer tool for your portfolio. Cons: less focused on budgeting, no option to manually add transactions for budgeting. I like to have a little control over what I'm doing. If they're not going to let me manually add some transaction that I can't figure out how to put in my budget, it would probably make me crazy. Sales calls for wealth management services. Aha. So that's one of the cons. So they're going to tell you how to do a fee analyzer, but they're also going to start calling you about wealth management services. Personal Capital lands at the top of their list with the best app for building wealth. So best app for couples. Let me go through this quickly. It's called Zeta. Zeta is one of the few free budget apps designed specifically for couples, joint finances or not. The app caters to all types of couples, including those who are living together, engaged, married, new parents. You can sync various accounts to track spending, each see your net worth and manage bills together. You can also sign up for a joint no-fee banking account and cards with features like early access to direct deposit, digital checks, access to the MoneyPass ATM network. You know, as I'm reading this, it sounds to me like there could be a lot of hidden fees inside some of those extra things that you're going to get. Early access to all these, you know, ATM network, contactless payments, and bill payments. I don't know. It doesn't. I didn't finish reading that, but pros and cons to all of these different things. So folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8255. 610-610-758-8810. You can talk live on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. It's 6:30. We have 83 degrees, mostly cloudy skies. Lehigh Valley weather. Tonight, slight chance of thunderstorms and showers with a low of 64. Thursday, showers expected with a high of 76. Thursday night, showers continue with a low of 57. Friday, a chance of showers, breezy with a high of 65. WDIY, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, your award-winning Lehigh Valley public radio station for over 25 years. Many choices, real voices. And speaking of real voices, Lori Siebert with your financial choices.
Thank you, James, and thank you for being here tonight. I do want to give a shout out to Andrea Reed. It's her birthday tomorrow, and Andrea is that lovely voice you hear on a number of the Valley National underwriting sponsorships for the show. So I want to thank Andrea for doing that many years ago. She works for Provident Bank now, I believe. I hope I'm saying that right. Yeah. So happy birthday, Andrea. We had a call from Nancy in Bath. She has complete physical and shared legal custody of her granddaughter, claimed granddaughter as a dependent on her 2019 tax return, hasn't filed 2020 yet. She didn't receive the stimulus for the granddaughter, but her daughter did. Why? What can she do going forward to get any additional stimulus? Well, Nancy from Bath, I'm just reading this like right off the top. Lori just walked in with it. And what I'm wondering is if your daughter claimed her daughter, your granddaughter, on the 2018 tax return. And therefore, the stimulus payment for having the child may have gone to your daughter based on the 2018 filing, at least for the first stimulus that came out last April or May. And then the December 2020, January 2021, the second stimulus could have been based on the 2019 return. And I am not sure what your income looks like on the 2019 return. Maybe your income was over the amount that would qualify for a dependent additional stimulus payment. And I'm not as familiar with the stimulus payment amounts for the dependents because I think it depended on income. So I don't know that off the top of my head, Nancy. I'm sorry. I just haven't seen it. It seems like every client I've worked on is single or married, and I know those off the top of my head. But perhaps that's what happened if your daughter had claimed her in 2018 and had not filed those returns by that April or May when they did the first stimulus payment, which happened with a lot of people, then the IRS was basing the stimulus payments on the 2018 returns, not 2019. The second stimulus was based on 2019, and the third stimulus is also based on 2019. If either of you did not get it, the second payment, then when you file your 2020 return, that is the time to claim the additional amount if you're within the income limits. It's called the recovery rebate credit. And if you did not get the third stimulus payment, which was just, you know, delivered for most people who were eligible based on 2019 income tax returns, that came out in March of 2021. So the third stimulus payment, if someone did not qualify for that, the IRS is reviewing the 2020 returns as they get filed and is catching up with those. So if they did not pay it to you based on the 2019 return, this is the third stimulus payment I'm talking about now. If they did not pay that to you and you file your 2020 return, they will catch up to you if you do qualify for it. All right? So that is kind of what I'm thinking, that it could have been based on 2018 if you did not get it and she got it and she may have claimed her daughter on the 2018 return. All right? So now that you're doing it, the 2019 and your 2020 return, hopefully you'll get what you're supposed to for that. I know, Nancy, that there was a problem at one point, I think, with grandparents who had their grandchildren as dependents. There was some little hiccup at some time. But again, because I did not have a client who had that, I am not intimately aware of that. And these things, you know, I become very familiar with when they're in front of me. And I have not seen that. So good luck. And I hope that you get what you're entitled to. And maybe talk to your daughter if you were supposed to have had that. All right. I appreciate the question, Nancy. Thank you for calling. So the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We are talking about more cash flow ideas. So we've been talking about budget apps and different ways to manage your cash flow. And it doesn't have to be a budget app. It could be the funnel method I talked about earlier. It could be Excel spreadsheets. It could just be, you know, a ledger, a book, whatever you might want to do. Some people use envelopes. But budget apps was something, in fact, that James Johnson, sitting here with me, had suggested we talk about some time ago. And while I've alluded to them a number of times, I haven't done a deep dive. And I thought this was a great article by these folks for Investopedia that I thought I would share it. And of course, you could look it up as well. So budget apps, something very helpful for people who are technically inclined. All right, so some other ideas for cash flow ideas that I said I thought I would like to talk about and has come up during doing tax returns. People who have health savings accounts. Okay, for years and years and years, health savings accounts have been around. And for years and years and years, I never saw a single person with one of them. A health savings account is an opportunity for people to save pre-tax dollars into an account that they can then use for medical expenses. But only some people are eligible to have them. And the people who are eligible to have a health savings account are people who are enrolled in a high deductible health plan. And there's all kinds of rules around the high deductible health plan. I'm not going to get into all of that tonight. But why I wanted to talk about it is I'm seeing more and more of these now, just in recent years. So for a long, long time, never saw them. Now in recent years, they are really becoming much more popular, especially amongst young people, because young people, you know, can have a high deductible health plan if they are for the most part quite healthy. You generally don't see a high deductible health plan in people who are, you know, middle-aged or getting older because they may have more expenses, more doctor visits, more issues, and, you know, don't want to put out so much money with a high deductible health plan. But, you know, each to his own, whatever your circumstances are. But for people who have the high deductible health plan, the reason they want to go with those sometimes, especially if they're healthy and they don't have a lot of high medical costs, is because it reduces the premiums that they have to pay. And quite often these days, we as employees who have employer-provided health insurance bear more and more of the cost of that health insurance. So if we have a high deductible health plan, it lowers the premiums. That's why we're seeing more people with them. Hence, if you have a qualifying high deductible health plan, you also have the opportunity to open up a health savings account and you can start putting money away. Here's the cash flow idea. Folks, if especially over this past year, you've learned how much you don't have to spend. So many of us think we have to spend when we could get out to the malls and the stores and all of that. And of course, I believe in, you know, supporting our economy and all of that. But if we've learned to spend a little less, or we're not commuting as much, we're working from home more, maybe your gasoline bills have come down, that you have a little bit more money in your pocket. And if you are someone with a high deductible health plan and a health savings account, you could put more in that health savings account. Generally, we do that through our employer, through withholding on our paycheck. And sometimes our employer puts money in it as well. So you might have an employer who will put $500 in a health savings account for you. Some employers might put $1,000 into a health savings account for you. And that's great. And that's kind of like free money. But you also, as an employee, can put money in. And there's limits depending on if you're single or if you have a family plan. So I think it's like $3,550 maybe for single and something like $7,100 for married, for a family plan. You can do an extra $1,000 if you're over age 50, I believe. So the idea of doing it through payroll, and this is critical, if you do it through payroll, you don't pay federal tax, Medicare tax, Social Security tax, state tax, local tax. It's just like a win-win-win-win. And then you put the money into the health savings account and you can invest it and it can grow. And when you go take it out to pay for medical expenses, you're not paying taxes on those earnings as long as you're using it for qualified medical expenses. And I have seen so many people not take full advantage of this, yet they still have all these medical bills they're paying. And the beauty of a health savings account, which is different than a flexible savings account, the flexible savings account is different. It's not a health savings account. It's not for people with high deductible plans. The flexible savings account, if you were to leave that employer and you haven't used all the money, you kind of lose it. You lose that money. You can't take it with you. And you have to spend it or you could lose it as well. Whereas the health savings account, you don't lose it. And you don't have to spend it. You don't have to take a distribution from it. You can let it grow and continue to grow. And if you leave the employer, you can take that health savings account with you and save all that money on taxes up front. Now, the cash flow idea, though, is if all of a sudden you've had all this money build up in your bank accounts and you have a high deductible health plan, you have a health savings account, and you look at your W-2 because you heard the show and you said, oh, gosh, my employer put something in and I put something in. And I look at my W-2 and I think it's code W and I see, you know, $500 into my health savings account. You also get a tax reporting document to see how much you contributed to it. You could still fund that up until May 17th of 2021. You can still put extra money in there. You don't get quite all the same tax benefits if you do it through your paycheck, because that's where you're saving on the state and local taxes and the Medicare tax and all of that. But if you do it yourself later outside of the payroll, because you weren't smart enough to do it in the gentlest, nicest ways I say that, because you didn't know about it. In 2020, you didn't do it through payroll. They give you this opportunity to do it up until the tax filing date, which is May 17th. You could still do it. You're still going to save taxes for federal and state. So you won't save the taxes for Medicare. You won't save the taxes for the local, but you will save taxes for federal and state. You can take it as a deduction. Don't go over. You don't want to do an excess contribution because that could be a problem. So that's a cash flow idea. And I am astounded that for people who are doing high deductible health plans, who have this opportunity for a health savings account, it's just a huge, huge saving opportunity. Of course, you have to have the cash flow or the cash to do it. And you may not think you have it during the year, but you didn't realize you weren't spending any money and all of a sudden your bank account has, $30,000 in it or something. Well, now you do have the money and you have till May 17th to do it. And then you might say to me, but Lori, I already filed my tax return. Well, do it and then amend your tax return. And then you amend your tax return and you say, oh, I inadvertently missed reporting my contribution to my health savings account by $3,000. And now you take the deduction. All right. Flexible spending account, I mentioned, you can't have both. You can't have both. So the flexible spending account allows you to do it on a pre-tax basis. And that could be for health care expenses or child care. But again, in those circumstances, you have to use that money within a certain period of time. Otherwise, it stays with the company. If you leave employment, you terminate. They keep it, so you always want to make sure you use all your flexible spending account money before you leave employment. Some people wait till the last minute in December to spend all their money, go to the eye doctor, go to the dentist. My suggestion is do it all in January, folks. Do that all in January. Use up the flexible spending account money. All right. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion on some more cash flow ideas. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Connect to WDIY with our new app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store and enjoy the great music, news, and programs you love on the go. The easy-to-use app is where you can listen to WDIY Live or your favorite music shows on demand with our two-week archive feature. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Hello and welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to WDIY 88.1, and you heard the commercial about the app. We've been talking about budget apps. You can get the WDIY app as well. Something to keep in mind. Take it with you wherever you go. We are talking about more cash flow ideas. If you have questions, there's still time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Cash flow idea, funding 401ks. Again, if it's after the fact, you look at your W-2 for 2020 and you see on your 401k, your W-2 has a code D or E, D for 401k, E for 403b. It tells you how much money you put into the 401k. And if you realize you didn't, you know, put in as much as you could have, and you can do more, it was $19,500, and you get to do an extra $6,500 if you're over age 50 for a total of, what does that add up to, $26,000 if you're over 50. You can't do more after the fact, but what you could do typically is change how much you're contributing in your plan through your employer. Many people think, and this could have been the case years and years ago, that they could only do it during open enrollment, but that's really, I don't even see it that way anymore. Typically, you have an app, or you can go online to a website to adjust your withholdings for your 401k, or you contact your HR department and tell them you want to increase your contributions to your 401k for 2021. You can do that typically. I see, you know, probably any time. It's rare that it's so limited to like quarterly. I used to see that, but something you might want to think about doing that saves you pre-tax dollars if that is where you are in your financial life. If someone's in a 22% bracket or higher, you might want that tax savings today. If you're someone who's in a 12% bracket or lower and you have extra cash flow, you may be interested in putting money away in a Roth 401k or a Roth IRA, where you're not getting the tax deduction today, but you're certainly getting, you know, tax-free growth on Roth features. So something else to think about. I did want to touch base, and I just realized I saw my note about Social Security. I wanted to really make sure I talked about this tonight, because this is also something I see a lot on tax returns. When we're looking at people who are on Medicare, typically age 65 and over, who are getting Medicare Part B, when you're looking at your Social Security statement and you see how much you're paying for Medicare, Medicare typically is, I think it's like 140 something a month. And what we have seen is sometimes that's much higher. It's called the IRMA adjustment, the income-related monthly adjustment amount. That changes based on your income. But you don't realize that if you've had a life event, you may be able to kind of petition Medicare to make an adjustment based on the lower income that you expect, not the higher income that you might have had in the past. So I'll talk about that more in a minute, but I have a caller on, I believe, line one, John from Fogelsville. Hi, John. Can you hear me okay?
Hi, Lori. Yes, I can hear you just fine.
Great. How can I help you?
Okay, so I have a retirement investment, which I hope is enough to cover my retirement. I'm going to be retiring next summer.
Okay.
But my financial advisor is advising me to buy long-term elder care insurance,
mm-hmm.
which is going to cost me about $13,500 a year.
Okay.
And it would last for 4 years, cover both my wife and I with a payment of $7,500 a month per person.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a fairly hefty investment, in my opinion. And I was just wondering what your thoughts on elder care insurance are.
Okay, well, so long-term care insurance, from my perspective, I think it's a very personal decision. In the years that I've been working with clients, what I have tended to find is people who've had family members who've experienced a long-term care need, like a nursing home need, and for however many years, those are the first people who ask about it and want it. And then I have clients whose parents or family members, you know, don't linger and they drop dead, whatever it might be, like my father, God bless him, heart attack, happiest way for him to go, he said. Well, would have been, and it worked. They don't want long-term care. So you have to first see if you have a need, what your history is, what your healthcare history is. There is so much involved in that decision. And then what happens is, you know, do you need to replace income? So some people can self-insure, depending on what their assets are. And some people have enough assets that they don't need to self-insure, but they have enough money that they could pay for it anyway and then preserve more of their wealth for the heirs they want to pass it on to. For people who maybe don't have children, they may not be interested in that at all. It all depends on if you need to preserve assets either for a surviving spouse or for, you know, your other heirs. So lots of decisions. But then also, John, there's different kinds of long-term care now. So there is maybe a joint policy. So sometimes you buy a certain amount of benefit and either of you could use it. So it doesn't have to be restricted to one or the other. I've seen where clients will say, oh, I want to preserve my pot. And I'm thinking, well, if your first spouse needs it, you know, you may never need it. So make sure you're using it for the first spouse. But there's also hybrid policies now where you could also get, a life insurance element to it. And sometimes people feel a little bit better about that, that if they end up never using the long-term care benefit, there still might be, you know, something left for the heirs if you've never used it. So, you know, it's really a personal decision. I can't steer you one way or another on the show. I just think it's smart to kind of lay it all out and see what you're getting for it. And if you really need it and it makes sense for you. And then you also want to make sure what it's covering, because a lot of people are more interested in in-home care, and you want to make sure that things like that are covered as well. So personal decision, John, but make sure you understand all of the pieces that go into that decision. Does that help? Because it sounds a little high to me, that $13,500.
Well, apparently, due to the COVID situation, the prices have gone way, way up. It was a lot less last year, but I didn't go for it last year.
Well, sometimes, too, your ages change, and people all of a sudden want it when they absolutely need it, and then it's really too late. So really kind of understand your own health history and your parents' health history, if you know that, and that could make a big difference in the decision for yourself as well. Okay.
Very good.
All right. Well, good luck. Good luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye. Yes, long-term care has gotten expensive because many companies, you know, what happened, it was a great concept, but what happened is the providers that were offering long-term care, the people that they were attracting were the people who had health histories that would need that kind of care. So when you talk about homeowners in a group, we all buy homeowners insurance, right? And the field is kind of even for all of us. And auto insurance, almost everybody has a car, right? So we kind of all buy auto insurance. Long-term care? Who are the people who are buying long-term care? Not everybody, but maybe the people who think they have that family history or their own health issues. So all of a sudden, it wasn't such a good group when we talk about, you know, insurance being lower when we're all participating in that group. It was more, you know, geared toward people who really needed it. And then the companies were paying it out like in huge sums. And that's why it got harder and harder for those long-term care insurance providers to continue offering that kind of coverage. And hence why these hybrid policies kind of came to the fore, because it could get people to feel like they're getting maybe a little bit of life insurance or something back out of it if they weren't going to use it all for their own long-term care expenses. So that's called a hybrid policy. And there's, you know, some more well-known ones out there, but I won't mention. Good luck, John. So the Social Security, if you are someone who ended up having an income-related monthly adjustment amount, adjustment to your Medicare Part B, I can't talk about this enough. I've mentioned it to a lot of clients over the years, and it has saved them a ton of money. Of course, the key thing being you have to have a major life-changing event. It can't be that, whoops, you know, you had some great capital gains last year and your income went up, and now you're not going to do that. Or, you know, you needed to put a roof on the house, you took a huge distribution out of your IRA, and this year you're not going to. No, when we're talking about a major life-changing event, we're typically talking about retirement, we're talking about losing a pension, maybe a divorce or a death of a spouse, where your circumstances could change such that the income on your tax return changes, because that's what Social Security is basing your Medicare premium cost on, which is your income from like 2 years ago. So for 2021, the Medicare premium is based on the 2019 return, and they will let you know typically what that cost is going to be. You know, usually December of 2020, January 2021, they'll let you know what your Medicare premium is going to be, and it's based on 2019. So if you know that your circumstances are changing, and in 2019 you made, you know, $400,000 and you got some huge bonus, some big payout, and now you're retired, and in 2021 your income's going down to $80,000, you can fill out a form. It's called an SSA-44, and it is through the Social Security Administration to report this Medicare income-related monthly adjustment amount, and you can tell them which tax year you have the reduction in income, and if you expect to have it. It could be marriage, divorce, death, work stoppage, work reduction, loss of income-producing property, loss of pension income, employer settlement payment. It could be a number of things. You could let them know, fill out this form, and I've had it work for a number of clients, and it really reduces that Medicare premium. I've had a client tell me you can do it more than once, which I had not realized. He had a work reduction, and then the next year a work stoppage. So it's great. You might be able to get the Medicare premium reduced, you know, more than once, but it has to be a life-changing event. So that was something I definitely wanted to make sure I talked about tonight when we were talking about some extra cash flow ideas. Self-employed health insurance deduction for those people who are self-employed. Make sure you're taking a health insurance deduction. If it is private insurance or Medicare qualifies, long-term care qualifies, dental and vision qualifies, as long as it's not group insurance. 529s, of course, you can make contributions to a 529 and get a deduction in Pennsylvania to the extent you have income, and it's capped on how many you're giving to, et cetera. So make sure you're taking advantage of some of these things. I could talk about them on and on. Next week, so just keep listening to the show. We'll talk about them over the next several months and years. Next week, I'm going to be joined by Dave Elowich, CFP professional, to hear his update and take on the Secure Act and the changes that you need to pay attention to. And I want to thank James Johnson for being here. Thank you, listeners, for calling in. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Lori, for being here as well. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.